Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Karen.
And I'm Paul. We know that stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the world of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. Intermittent self-catheterization can be daunting for both patients and also the practitioners when learning the skill of teaching ISC. In this episode, I speak to Karen Tomlin about learning to teach ISC and the important skills needed to keep people concordant with their ISC routine. Karen, welcome.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Another podcast, another fantastic topic. And I am in no means an expert at all in ISC. So I am glad that I am talking to you about it and you're not talking to me about it. So what I'd like to do is I'm just going to open it straight up into a question, if that's okay. ISC, what is it? And what are the key skills needed when teaching ISC?
So intermittent self-catheterization is when we teach a patient to catheterize themselves on a regular basis. And the key difference with ISC and long-term catheterization is that catheter doesn't remain in. So they insert the catheter themselves, drain off whatever remains in their bladder, remove the catheter and carry on with their day as normal. People may do ISC once or twice a day. Some people may be completely reliant on it, so have to perform it five or more times in a day. It's far more common than people think, and it's much better for people because it carries a far lower risk of UTIs. We know that people feel a greater sense of independence. There's less problems around body image. So it really is the best treatment method for people who struggle to empty their bladder properly. And then in terms of the key skills, I think when people are teaching, some people think, you know, you're just teaching someone to stick a catheter in. You know, it's the physical act of putting a catheter in. For me, teaching ISC is much, much wider. So you need to understand your patient's psychological approach. So how do they feel about that treatment? What impact is that going to have on their lifestyle? And then also giving them the confidence and the skills to be able to fit that in with their lives and keep on doing ISC for a long term and being able to manage any challenges or hurdles that may come up along the way as well. So it's a big communication skill as well when you're actually teaching people how to catheterize.
I think that's a really, really important thing there. And it sounds like ISC is a real empowerer. It's an empowering that individual to continue with their life. And as you said, you know, there's many, many crossovers with many parts of nursing when we're talking about things like body image and those sorts of things and acting in concordance with the nurse's recommendations and the healthcare professional's recommendations for any care that's being prescribed. But that does bring me on to the next thing, which is talking about fear. So many people talk about the fear of doing ISC, and that comes from both the nurse teaching it, the fear of the nurse teaching it, but also from the fear of the individual who will actually be undertaking it on themselves. So double-sided question, what can nurses do to help, first of all, the individual in overcoming that fear of ISC? But then also, if you are a more skilled practitioner in ISC and you're potentially teaching a more junior practitioner about teaching ISC to an individual, what can they do? What kind of top tips would you give for that individual as well?
Okay, so for patients, we know many individuals who have to do ISC are really scared of inserting a catheter. You know, they have a fear of pain. You know, they worry about the impact that it will have on them. And I think men in particular get really concerned about, you know, you're asking me to put that in there. It's a real challenge. I think part of the assessment process is really understanding where your patient is at. I know many people talk about motivational interviewing as a really good way of encouraging their patient, getting over those fears and really taking the time to understand what in particular are you scared of. For me, I have catheterized myself really to get an understanding and be able to explain to people in a really honest way. So I always say to people, it's a strange sensation. It feels different. It feels weird, but it's not painful. And it's, again, if someone does find it painful, there are plenty of different products that you can use that can help reduce that pain. So it's being open with people that there are options, you know, things can change. We can adjust things to suit them. And again, I used to meet people who you knew full well they needed to do ISC multiple times a day, but that was going to be too big a risk in the first few weeks. So we used to start off, can you just try and do it once a day for me? And then once they'd got that confidence with once a day, you would then build them up to the regime that was best for them. So it's having some flexibility to meet those patient needs. And that's where the time during your assessment is really critical to really understand where that person's coming from in the first place.
It's interesting that you mentioned motivational interviewing, because I'm a massive advocate of motivational interviewing. And I think doesn't matter what kind of nursing speciality you actually do, I think the power of motivational interviewing is almost second to none. And I know, and again, I'm going to do a plug here, Colopar Professional, we do have a virtual motivational interviewing course that you can undertake. That's with a very skilled practitioner called Judith Carpenter. So please have a word with your Colplast territory manager, your Colplast rep, about the motivational interviewing. And if you do need more information on it, you can always email us at colplastprofessional@cprofessionaluk@colplast.com, or you can always log on to the website at colplastprofessional.com as well, and there'll be some more information on motivational interviewing there. But Karen, as I say, motivational interviewing, it really does, for me, when I'm talking to my patient cohort, motivational interviewing really does help manage expectations and support in that concordance, because we really are inquiring about the importance of whatever that, you know, the care that they are actually needing, be it ISC in this instance. So when we're talking about motivational interviewing, when we're talking about reducing fear and we're driving that change talk when it comes to motivational interviewing and ISC, a lot of the time we can talk, you know, patients can be afraid of being on their own. It's what can I expect? What, you know, can I speak to anybody else and that sort of thing? And sometimes it's all about safe signposting, isn't it? So in relation to ISC, what kind of support is available out there for, but again, double-edged question for, you know, what kind of support is out there for both the practitioner and the patient if they are needing that extra little bit of support and reassurance and potential information giving?
For patients, a lot of it revolves around they may have an underlying condition such as spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis. So usually those patient organisations do a really good job of supporting with other practicalities such as ISC. So that's usually a good source of help. For nurses, we really advocate the professional groups such as the RCM Bladder and Bowel Forum, BORN, the ACA, all really good professional groups that advocate for urology and continence practitioners wherever they may be working. And they can support with policy guidance, study days, you know, there is a wealth of support, and also building up your networks. So when they have conferences and study days, it's a really good way of building up your own personal local network. I think as well, specialists can feel quite isolated and lonely, but there is usually someone fairly close by who'll be able to help. So if you're working in a hospital setting, you might have a community continence service who can support, and vice versa. You know, I think from experience in the past, community and acute trusts didn't like to talk to each other that much. But I think building those networks within your county or your region are a really good way of sharing expertise and understanding that the way we approach different clinical situations sometimes has to be different. And, you know, we can learn things from each other doing that. You can find links for those organisations in the episode notes.
Thanks for that, Karen. And I think that using and being able to have those key charitable organisations and those organisations for any kind of nurse specialist is a vital resource that I think we all need to make sure that we do tap into and we are aware of their existence as well. Now, I'm a big advocate of top tips. And I like it when people give us top tips. I've got quite a few top tips when it comes to my speciality of stoma care. But I'm imagining and I'm thinking that there are some key challenges that both nurses and, again, patients do find challenging when it comes to ISC. So what would you say were the top kind of five challenges that patients face when they're actually undertaking ISC?
I think one of my top tips is really understanding what motivates your patient. So really getting to the heart of what would make a difference in their life. How could ISC improve things for them? So one that I very often hear is, I want to have a good night's sleep without waking up needing the toilet. But it can be something completely different and strange. And I use this example regularly because I think this is a good one. A friend of mine has MS and she reached a stage where she couldn't take her dog out for a walk without having to stop and have a wee in the bushes halfway round. And when she started doing ISC, she didn't have to stop on her dog walk. And as far as she was concerned, that was perfect. So it might be someone has, you know, a slightly different understanding of what a win is for them. So it's taking the time to understand with your patient what is their personal win and help people to keep a focus on that so they can see that they have made progress and ISC is a good thing for them. So that's a really helpful one. The other one, UTIs, really presents a problem for people. And it's very common for people to get a UTI in the early days of doing ISC. And the best thing is to be upfront with people beforehand that it's a risk, it's very common, and really importantly, it's not something that they've done wrong. So I think if you set that expectation beforehand, you're less likely to cause distress and panic with a UTI if it does happen.
It's really interesting that you talk about, you know, the expectations and setting expectations, because I again, in my speciality, I find sometimes when individuals, especially when you're discussing introducing a new plan of care or something, or introducing anything new, individuals can come with certain set expectations of what stoma care is going to be like. Or for me, it's like, if I have a stoma, my life's going to be so much better because of X, Y, Z. You know, it's all going to be better. It's going to be rosy. And I'm kind of assuming that that can be similar with ISC. When you're introducing ISC, it's that having that open discussion and saying, it's going to, you know, we're choosing this pathway because it is going to improve, hopefully improve your quality of life, but there can be bumps in the road. You can have challenges during your ISC training, teaching, and then long-term as well. You know, it's not always going to be an easy ride. So have you had any situations where you really have had to kind of manage people's expectations when you've been introducing ISC?
I think with ISC, in my experience, people tend to view it as a negative thing. So yeah, I fully get where people with a stoma can see it as a positive and it's a big change to their life. But with ISC, people view it negatively. And many people who have to do ISC have a neurological condition, and they often link that as a serious deterioration of their condition. So particularly people with MS, they view it as the next step on in disability that they now have to catheterize. So sometimes that argument is saying, yes, you're seeing it as a bad thing, but actually it is going to make a big improvement on your life and on your symptoms. So that is a big starting point for those conversations.
That's a really interesting point, because when we again talk about expectations and we're talking about concordance, I'm assuming that there's lots of methods that we can do when we're talking to individuals about ISC and supporting that concordance, supporting that and increasing that confidence in their ISC. So is being able to explain about how fitting it in with their lifestyle and the understanding of, like, is that quite a big aspect when you are actually undertaking that, the pre-assessment for ISC?
Yes, and For me, letting people know that they have choices in this whole situation is fundamental. So whether that is the choice of product that they use, the choice of where and when they catheterize. So I used to say to people, your catheter regime is not in charge of you. You're in charge of it. So you fit your routine in around your lifestyle and you pick the most convenient times of day for you or the times when you will get the most benefit for it. So, for example, the people who wanted a good night's sleep, you catheterize last thing at night before you go to bed. It's making sure that your routine works the best for you rather than being ruled by it. And choice really helps people to feel involved, that they're in charge of that whole bladder care, bladder management. And it's letting them know that if they don't like something about their routine, there is always advice and support to change things. So, you know, situations may change. They may need a different product. You know, and another example with products is they might use one product when they're out of the house. They might use a completely different catheter when they're at home. And it's really important to offer that choice and offer the best thing to help with their individual lifestyle.
It's interesting when you talk about product and product selection, and there are a number of products out there. And I know, again, connecting it to stoma, which is, as if people haven't guessed, that's my area of speciality, that we do have some discussions about formularies. And for the clinical nurse specialists out there listening to the podcast, is formulary becoming a bigger topic? Is there more issues in relation to ISC and catheters in general in the continence world? How have you found the introduction of formularies? Has there been an introduction of formularies?
Yes, so we are seeing more and more formularies coming in. I would say more so in terms of indwelling catheters and bag usage, but some areas have got formularies for their ISC catheters. It is really important within that people do have a choice though. And I always come back to the fundamental of, it might be the cheapest catheter, it might be a really good catheter, but if your individual person hasn't got the dexterity to open the packet, it's useless. And that's where you need that flexibility to meet individual patient needs. So I think formularies are great to give a guide. And if that process has gone through the right rigor to make sure the products on there are of a quality and do what they're meant to do, you still need an element of flexibility because there are going to be individuals who have very specific needs.
Formularies are really, they're more and more on the agenda for everybody. I've had it where prescribers are very adamant, you cannot have X, it's not on the formulary. And I think sometimes personally, I find it a struggle because I'm sitting there thinking, I know that product X is going to exponentially increase that individual's quality of life. And it can be challenging. Sometimes it can be really, really challenging having those conversations and actually saying, hold on, no, I'm doing this in the patient's best interest. It's not my interest. I'm doing it in the patient's best interest. And I think as long as we keep the patient in the center of everything that we do and actually say, do you know what? No, I'm going to pick this up. I'm not going to let this drop. And again, if anybody does need any further help or support on formularies or anything like that, please, you can always drop us an email at cprofessionaluk@coloplast.com. And hopefully we can support you if you are having any issues with formularies or you need any support on how to actually communicate with people and say, actually, I don't really know where to start. So please drop a Coloplast professional an email and we can see how we can support you in those sort of situations. Now, back to the actual ISC from what we were talking about. And, you know, I know we've mentioned motivational interviewing and we've mentioned some of the things about, you know, fitting it in around their life and those sorts of things. But can you kind of put a key topic or a key area, which is a massive, or you were classed as one of the biggest motivations for individuals with you who do undertake ISC for continuing to actually undertake the ISC routine, which I'm guessing routine is essential and keeping that routine is essential. So what actually motivates people the most when it comes to ISC?
I think it's keeping really focused on symptoms. One of the challenges we find is that people with bladder symptoms, those symptoms creep in very, very slowly. And you might not even notice it's happening. And then it's only sort of a year down the line, you think, oh my goodness, I go to the toilet every hour. I wake up three times every night. And women in particular come to accept that as normal. So at the start, you kind of have to convince them of what is a normal routine and get them back to that point of, you know, yes, you can sleep through the night. Yes, you can comfortably go out for a cup of coffee with your friends and not stress about where the nearest toilet is. And so I think it's keeping focus on that. And it's also being clear with people that if that changes over time, there is still more that can be done to adjust that. So we can review your ISC routine. Some people get symptoms of overactive bladder, even if they're doing ISC, particularly if you've got a neurological condition. So we can use medication to help reduce those symptoms as well. So I think it's always having that open and honest conversation with your nurse who taught you ISC and asking for help and making sure you get a review. And that, again, your routine is working for you. And if it's not, there's lots of things that could be done. I view a lot of continence care as like a really problem-solving approach and really having a dig around lots of different factors and changing a couple of little things to, you know, tweaking. We're constantly tweaking to try and get the best outcome for people. So, yes, tweak the ISC routine.
And again, it's one of those ones where I'm lucky enough, I speak to a lot of different clinical nurse specialists in a lot of different fields. And I think that's one of the things that really does drive all specialities of clinical nurses is it's that thing of, do you know what? No, we've got to tweak. We've got to keep on working. We can work on it. And it really does add to that passion of the clinical nurse specialist, be it what, you know, whatever speciality you're in. It's having that background knowledge, which just comes with experience and experience and experience of being able to say, actually, no, I remember I had a chap 2 years ago, very similar situation to this. He tried this. And I say it to lots of clinical nurse specialists, which is communicate, use your peers, use that peer-to-peer support, not being afraid to, you know, to actually speak to a colleague, whether it's in the same hospital as you or a hospital 200 miles away. It's, you know, that thing of saying, look, I've got this, what's going on? You know, have you got any advice for me? And I think that's a really, really kind of crucial thing to say is, because lots of clinical nurses almost think that, you know, they can be quite a lonesome place sometimes, especially if you are the clinical nurse specialist in any kind of practice. It can be very, very lonely when you are actually there on your own. You're thinking, I'm just not winning. What else can I do? And I think, you know, from what you've said, you know, it is that thing of when we need to tweak and we're thinking, what else can we do? It's having that ability to be able to say, I need some extra help here.
And I think it's taking on that challenge often of people's lifestyles as well. So I know very recently I was talking to someone who saw a man who's a sheep farmer in a very remote part of Scotland who spends all day in the field. How can we support him? She got that sorted. A gentleman I saw some years ago, he worked for one of the Formula One teams as an engineer, so would go off out of the country for months on end on the Formula One circuit. How can we keep getting his catheters to him? How can we make sure that he's, you know, safe and has got someone he can contact? We sorted it. And that one took a team approach. So yeah, I like a challenge like that. It's fun helping people, because I always say continence care in itself is not that difficult. You know, when you know the tweaks, it's relatively easy to do. But the difference it makes to people when you get it right is phenomenal. So that's why I've always found continence care really, really rewarding.
And I think that's it. I think sometimes it's that reward that we go for, isn't it? And I think, you know, whether, no matter what speciality you're in, whether it's stoma, whether it's continence, whether it's diabetes, it's that challenge and knowing that you have made a difference to that individual. And I think that ISC is one of those situations where we as practitioners, or yourself as a practitioner, might say, well, come on, it's relatively easy. But we should never really underestimate the difference that ISC can make to people and the positive impact that it can have. But also, you know, it can be a very scary place to do. And, you know, think the thought of it myself, you know, I'm a healthcare professional. Even now, I'm, you know, if somebody said to me, I'd be thinking, okay, you know, it'd take me back. But, you know, I think what we really need to emphasize is with ISC is it can be a life changer. It can really, really improve an individual's quality of life. Well, Karen, I think It's been brilliant talking to you. It's clear that you know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to ISC. In the podcast description, there is a list of the organizations that Karen has mentioned previously. There's also the Coloplast Professional website. That's coloplastprofessional.com. And there's also the Coloplast Professional email there as well. So if you do any need any more help or support, that's there as well. So Karen, thank you so much. I like it when it's just me and you on these podcasts. I love having guests, but I like it when it's just me and you. So Karen, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really, really interesting. You've actually kind of sparked my interest again in ISC. I might even go and have a little look.
Come on, it's continents. It's really good, Paul.
So Karen, thank you. Really enjoyed today. And I look forward to speaking to you in the near future. Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.